And welcome to another edition of Soundography, a crash course in popular music, one band at a time. I'm Brian Ibbett.
And I am Hammond Chamberlain.
And we're here to talk to you about, we do these episodes about quote-unquote obscure bands. And I know, you know, Pearl Jam, Duran Duran, the last couple of episodes we've done, not super obscure, but we do like to expose the bands that have, you know, one or two big hits that you may know about and several that you don't, or a long career that maybe you're not aware of. And this is a perfect example of that, which it's the band Blues Traveler.
Yeah, it's kind of the same thing, though. I mean, Pearl Jam, everyone knows their first three albums. Duran Duran, everyone knows that they did something up until 88.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And so as far as I think a lot of people are concerned, there was up to four, mm-hmm. or maybe even just four. And
right. the album, not four albums though.
Yeah, the album four, and then maybe straight on to Mourn if you hung on, but then that was it for many people.
Right. Yeah, and this is funny because this is a band that that I even had to kind of rediscover. I remember hearing them back in the early 90s. I was working in a software company, a startup software company that was started in a guy's house, basically. And he had bought a house and then built offices in what was his garage. And we'd all bring in CDs. We'd listen to the local Boulder World Music Radio station, which is KBCO, still around, great station. Not as good as it was back in the 90s. But they had a love affair with Blues Traveler on that station. They'd always be coming in to play in studio. And they'd play not just the big hits, but also kind of the deeper cuts. And this was from right around, you know, the first album, right on into four, and then beyond, of course. But I remember they were basically the soundtrack to our office was Blues Traveler.
Yeah, I discovered them in Norfolk, Nebraska in 1991. I have a very vivid memory of this. A guy says, "Oh, you play harmonica. You'd love these guys." And I'd been playing Huey Lewis in the News and some Muddy Waters stuff, but when I heard John Popper, and I think the first track he played was Bagheera, and I thought, this is nuts. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. Right. No, it was Ivory Tusk was the first song he played. And this was nuts, and it totally changed the way I looked at the instrument and the way I wanted to play the instrument.
Wow.
So it was a definite eye-opening experience. And in my attempts to try to sound like him early on, there was a moment where I remember we were playing at the Dead Goat Saloon here that's no longer here. And I passed out and went down because I didn't know how to breathe properly yet.
It's a hyperventilating instrument, right? You're breathing back and forth really quickly, mm-hmm. sometimes for minutes at a time if you've got a long harmonica solo. Without really taking a genuine breath, a breath that's not
doing something.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
And some of those very note heavy solos, if you're not using a proper technique, you can start to see stars.
Mm-hmm. Right. Oh, geez. Wow. So band is, as you mentioned, fronted by John Popper, amazing, harmonicist. What is the word? What is the word for someone who's great at harmonica?
I bet you could call it harpist, because the short term word is a harp. Mm-hmm. And I think you could just call it harpist or harmonica player. I don't know if there's an actual ist word to it.
Okay. Harmonica player. All right. Well, that doesn't sound as exciting as harmonicaist. But started in 1990, self-titled debut album that actually, you know, again, launched a hit, a pseudo hit that that I remember from those early days of radio, which was But Anyway, mm-hmm. which is such a great song. It's such a fun song. And then just basically going on from there, right? I mean,
It was interesting because But Anyway also got rehashed back in 90, what was that, 90, when did Kingpin come out?
Oh, yeah, 90, 94, 95.
Yeah, because that they play But Anyway, dressed as Amish rock, as an Amish rock band.
Right.
At the end of Kingpin.
Not quite the relaunch level, but repopularization level as Bohemian Rhapsody and Wayne's World, but certainly enough to kind of get people knowing them for more than just Run Around and Hook.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, exactly. Very much so.
Because that was.
And then in 91, they released Travelers and Thieves, which is a departure from the first album because it seemed to be a little bit more experimental and it didn't rely as heavily on the harmonica solo as much as it relied on like the songwriting and different recording techniques, new sounds and things like that. And I guess the big hits out of that were, like I mentioned, Bagheera was a great song for me. But I think the standout track would be All in the Groove.
All in the Groove, yeah. Oh, such a great song. And I guess not one that that they don't include as one of their greatest hits. It seemed like it was a single, right? I mean, it seemed like it was a song that they really released to promote the band. But you don't find it on any greatest hits CDs.
I read somewhere that the reason they don't play it live very often, it was written in a key that was hard for him to sing in night after night after night. So, and they tried transposing it, I guess, and it just didn't feel right. So they don't play it live very often. So if you look through their live catalog, their official release live catalog, I don't know if it's on any of those.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
No, but I've got, there are plenty of bootlegs with it, especially early on when they didn't have a very deep catalog. As it is now, they've got, you know, more than enough songs to fill a 3-hour show.
Oh, for sure. Yeah.
And as a jam band, that could just be The Mountains Cry.
Right. It's one song just played for 3 hours. Five drum solos, a harmonica solo.
A couple and, guitar solos, a bass solo.
And a flautist who isn't a member of the band for some reason. It just popped up on stage. No, I mean, they're in that kind of jam band. It's funny. They're kind of a crossover to that jam band. They're not quite as rambly as Fish or Leftover Salmon, but they were part of all of that genre.
That kind of the revival of the hippie movement. Grateful Dead ties.
Yes, exactly. Not just ties, ties as in connections, as well as ties as in clothing designed by Jerry Garcia.
One of the things, I've been reading John Popper's book, Suck and Blow. Mm-hmm. And if you don't know the context, if you don't know the context of the title of the book, it's something you have to explain when someone sees it on your desk at work.
Yeah, right.
So it talked about how
I'm not going to make any comment about, you know, what other famous people might have that same autobiography. That's as far as I'll go with that. I'll let people imagine the rest. They can fill in the junk. Sorry, go ahead.
He was talking about the design of the Black Cat logo. Mm-hmm. And Suzanne Vega's brother designed that. And
oh, really?
Used to hang out with him. Yeah.
Oh, that's crazy. Okay, I had no idea about that. And that's the cat you see on the cover of 4, probably most predominantly on the cover of 4. And I always thought it was some sort of reference to John Popper with the sunglasses. And
well, according to the book, they were out doing a kind of a jam session one night somewhere, and this black cat was hanging around. And after a while, they played for and recorded this whole thing and took pieces of that recording and wrote songs that had appeared on the first album. And the thing kind of got called as the Black Cat Jam. And then because of that, the cat became kind of their logo.
Interesting.
And their mascot almost. So that's kind of where it went.
Now, were they always known as Blues Traveler? He said, kind of knowing the answer.
they were not. They actually were called the Blues Band for a while. And then they watched Ghostbusters.
Okay.
And liked the whole Gozer the Traveler thing. And they went with Blues Traveler.
I love that. It's just such a funny, such a funny source to get a band name. But I guess you get a lot of bands.
It's
get
their not any different from, than Mookie Blaylock.
Right. Yeah. Right. Or Save Ferris.
Yeah.
Or,
exactly.
You know, Veruca Salt. I mean, there's, you know, getting your band name from like a misheard lyric or a movie line or something, I think is,
let's see, we've done Duran Duran with Barbarella.
Oh, right. Yeah. Another movie reference.
Mookie Blaylock with Pearl Jam, which is a basketball player.
Right.
And now Blues Traveler, which is a Ghostbusters.
This is the, you know, Gozer.
Yeah.
It's a good thing they weren't Blues Gozerian.
Or just the band that, Ray, when someone asks you if you're a god, you say yes, live in concert.
Right.
The one thing that kind of stands out before we move on to the new next album is that very early on, John Popper kind of revealed his skill as kind of being a very good emotional storyteller in a song structure. Mm-hmm. He can convey a fairly good story from beginning to end, and then he's able to pull out and make references to genuine emotional touches and emotional feelings through that song structure. And he's very good at it. And he seemed to reach his high point at about Bridge, maybe Straight On Till Morn 4.
I just couldn't cry, no matter how hard I try. I knew the love we shared was dead. Until she gave me a letter with some words she wrote down, and I swear this is what she.
But
said.
I mean, he's really good at that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it really is. I mean, and not just the, you know, I mean, playing the harmonica, the songwriting, the lyrics. They're not just well written. They're really clever, mm-hmm. and there's a lot of puns in there, and there's a lot of. I mean, it's very, I see a lot of ties. I don't know why I make the connection, but maybe it's just because they came from that same decade and they have a similar feel. But Bare Naked Ladies, mm-hmm. like there's a very similar feel with the songwriting, very clever. And you can enjoy the music kind of on the surface level. But if you dig a little bit deeper and you pay attention to the lyrics, you're going to get something else out of it. And I really like that in a band. I really like those layers because that means that when you're listening to them, you're going to hear something new every time.
Yeah, it's very true. Now, in 93, they released Save His Soul, which is, without question, from back to front, my favorite album they've done. Mm. It's got Love of My Life. It's got Whoops. It's got New York Prophecy, Save His Soul. All those songs are great.
Any sympathetic you would do, who's going to hear them next? Well, I bought it live, for the sky is much too high. Keep it in your eye.
And if I were to be stuck on an island and they were only allowed me to have one Blues Traveler album on that island, that would be it.
Okay, good.
So it's a solid recording, and I just love it.
Mm-hmm. I think mine would be 4. And not just because of the hits, but also some of the other songs that came from that album I really, really connect with.
Yeah, 4 came out in 1994, and I own the music book that has actual, not just guitar tab, but harmonica tab in it.
Which is fascinating. I'd love to see how harmonica tablature is written, because you see, obviously, piano and string and melody guitar, very familiar with that. You know, rhythm guitar, you get that little notation with the grid and the dots that show you where your fingers need to be placed, and it tells you the chord you're going to be doing. And drum notation, you get the little X's, mm-hmm. on, you know, how you need to hit the drums. But I can't imagine what harmonica notation
looks like. There's some arrows and some numbers. And especially like a John Popper traditional solo, there's a whole lot of notes and arrows and numbers.
So arrows being suck or blow.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Thank you.
Sure. No problem.
So it's interesting though, but I learned very quickly trying to do those solos note for note that a lot of harmonica playing is kind of based on your own natural breathing rhythm and your own internal way of doing that art of breathing. And so although I got to a point where I could sound like his solo, it never was genuinely his because my breathing pattern is distinctly different than his. And so what I did was I finally just gave up on trying to do it note for note and just would go for that general feel and hit some of the main melody points in it and then move on, because I could not ever sound exactly like that.
And I think with harmonica, you've got a lot more flexibility to do that. It feels like way more of an improvisational instrument than guitar or piano, at least not in a non-jazz situation.
Yeah.
I think you can get away with not adhering to the exact way a song was written to do it as a piece that you're playing somebody else's written harmonica music. Totally makes sense.
Yeah.
It makes sense. It makes sense in my head. I don't know if I explained it well.
No, you did very well. You made it very well.
Okay, good.
It was at about this time when I actually started going to see them in concert. I saw them at the Red Rock show there in Denver probably 3 or 4 times. I would drive out, stay with some friends, see the show, sleep, spend the night, and head out the next day. And I loved seeing them.
See a show.
I loved seeing them at Red Rocks. It was great.
Yeah. You can see a horrible band at Red Rocks and they'll just be amazing.
Yeah. The venue does kind of cover up some of the flaws of a band.
It does. Well, maybe not cover up, but distract you from the flaws of a band, right?
Like, and especially a 4th of July show there, because even if they were horrible, as soon as it got dark, the whole city in front of you above the rocks would light up with fireworks.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, such a great venue to see a show. I completely understand why people travel hours and hours just to get here to see a show at Red Rocks, because it is so good.
And then in 97, they released Straight On Till Morn, which I guess was the record label's attempt to try to push them into 4 Part 2. And
okay. So another singles driven, hits driven album.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And they released a bunch of them on the radio and they just didn't seem to get the traction and the attention that they did with 4. And I don't know what the difference is, because there are some really pretty fun songs on Straight On Till Morn.
Yeah, I like that album a lot. I'm trying to look ahead to my 5 songs just to make sure. Yeah, Felicia. Neither of us picked Felicia, but that's a fun song. It's a really fun song and could have easily been a hit. Mm-hmm. And I wonder if it's that lightning in a bottle kind of thing that a lot of bands try to do with follow-up albums to albums that are a huge success, where they try and capture the same feel and they turn out something that sounds really good, but the audience has said, no, we've kind of heard that. Now we want something. We want to hear you evolve. We want to hear something different.
Or they've moved on. They've
moved on.
That group from 1994 that bought every album up to that point, they all of a sudden were older and had moved on to something else.
Right.
I mean, the
music
listening populace is pretty fickle.
Yeah, they are. I'm not saying me. Yeah,
no,
they are.
No. In general, they're pretty fickle. It's hard to find.
Totally.
It's hard for a band to stay successful over the course of 3 albums, let alone entire career.
Totally.
We didn't cover, we mentioned John Popper, but we didn't mention the rest of the band.
Oh, let's do that.
Yeah.
Let's talk about, because that's a rock blasphemy, is to only consider the front man.
Yeah. How would you pronounce the guitar player's last name?
I wouldn't. No, okay. I pronounce it. Chan Kinchla?
That's kind of what I think, Kinchla.
Yeah, Kinchla.
Then Brendan Hill is the drummer. Then Bobby Sheehan is the bass player, and he passed away in 1999, and we'll talk a little bit more about that. And then Ben Wilson was added with the album Bridge for keyboards.
In 2001.
And then Tad Kinchla, Chan's brother, picked up the role of bass player starting with the album Bridge. And up until Bridge, the keyboard parts had been done by Paul Schaefer.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Wow, just kind of like an well, I guess credited, right?
Yeah, he was credited, yeah.
But just kind of stepping in as a little bit of a session musician for that. And I mean, they've got ties. They've had lots of ties with Paul Schaefer and David Letterman. They were on there all the time and as a group, and then just as kind of intermingled with the band, you'd occasionally see them.
Yeah. And for a while in 1994, I've said this before, I will say it again, I'll stand by this. 1994 mm-hmm. and Blues Traveler is to Huey Lewis in 1984. They were everywhere.
They were, yeah.
Movies, TV, soundtracks. You could not go anywhere without running into a Huey Lewis song from their album 4, which is spelled mm-hmm. differently, but it's very coincidental.
Another parallel. Yeah. Wow.
But I really think it's a solid argument that I'd be willing to take on with anybody who would like to, you know, debate me on that. But if you go point for point, soundtracks, TV, appearances on Saturday Night Live, Letterman, all that stuff, they were everywhere. It was ubiquitous in 1994, 95. I'm not sure if they slept those 2 years with as much as they did.
Well, they did, but they did it in on tour. And so they, you know, John Popper would step away from the mic, disappear for about 10 minutes and catch a cat nap in the back.
Yeah, it was. Yeah. And then they'd cover Secret Agent Man for Ace Ventura and go right back to it.
There's a man who leads a life of danger. To everyone he meets, he stays a stranger. Oh, with every move he makes, another chance.
So we covered Straight Until Morn in 2001. So they suffered the loss of their bass player in 1999, and then John Popper had some health issues that he dealt with around that same time. So they were gone for a while, and then in 2001 they came back with Bridge. And I actually think Bridge is as solid of an album as 4 or Save His Soul is. It just has a very, very different feel to it because mm-hmm. of the emotion that they were putting into that album.
Right. Yes, for sure. I mean, they're coming back from some emotional stuff, losing Bobby and a lineup change. And were the health issues related to his weight? I mean, I'm trying to say this in a...
Yeah, they were. One of the chapters in one of his book is called The Race to 430.
Oh, wow. 430 pounds?
Yeah.
Holy mackerel.
So, I mean, he was in some pretty rough shape. I mean, he'd been in a motorcycle accident and broke his leg in a bunch of places and needed knee replacements and hip and all kinds of stuff, all kinds of surgeries. And so he was in this wheelchair and he was running the Horde Festival and mm-hmm. took on a lot of stress. And I think that it just kind of all added up to being grotesquely unhealthy.
Yeah.
And he needed to make some changes, and he did. And he came back in 2001, kind of a different man.
Yeah, much slimmer. And, you know, you're seeing videos for Back in the Day, which was the song for that, or concert videos or whatever. And he looks like a different person. Mm-hmm. Like, he doesn't look like the John Popper that, he's wearing the vest. He's playing the harmonica. But who's this new dude?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's really interesting.
Yeah.
In 2003, they released the album Truth Be Told, which I actually own in 5.1.
Mm.
Which is very cool.
That is cool.
And it's a good album. It's not my favorite by any stretch, but it's a good album. Mm-hmm. If they release Save His Soul or 4 at 5.1, I'd snatch that up in a heartbeat.
Oh, sure. Right.
But right. I bought what they had.
Yeah. It's funny they picked that album to do on the high definition sound.
Well,
like
I
that.
Think that was just what was popular at the time. I think that if you think about 2003, DVD players and 5.1 audio systems were kind of moving in. And I think record labels were trying to kind of buy into that surround sound mentality.
Yeah.
And it was just something that they did.
You know what? And I totally remember there being a time, and I'm gonna admit right now that I had a Laserdisc player. I actually still have a Laserdisc player and some Laserdiscs. And you'd go to, you know, because they weren't as popular, and the studios would pick and choose. You had your Criterion collection, so you had some really popular movies and well-made movies. But then it was movies that the studio maybe was trying to push. So you could go get that VHS copy of Nothing But Trouble, but you could also pick it up on Laserdisc. And I think back in those days, I may have bought Laserdiscs just because there was nothing else to buy at the time, or just because there were no other Laserdiscs to buy at the time that I wanted. I was like, oh yeah, that was, I guess, a pretty good movie, but it's in high quality video and I can flip over the disc halfway through the movie to watch the
nothing like
half.
Making my movie viewing experience like listening to an LP
or an 8-track tape. Yeah. Right. Exactly. Yeah. Thinking.
And then in 2005, they released Bastardos. Yeah.
I love that title.
It's an interesting album. It's very different from anything up until that point. It's not bad, but it's very, very different. I would say that if we're going to start with an album, don't start with that one.
Yeah, right, right.
In 2007, they did Cover Yourself, which leads us into the discussion of them and their proclivity and willingness to do cover songs.
Right. Yeah, I love a band that that contributes to tribute albums, contributes to soundtracks, things like that. And Cover Yourself was a way for them to do new versions of some of their existing songs, right? Some of their, not just hits, but like, you know, some deeper cuts, maybe ones that were a little bit more personal and stuff like that. I love it when bands do stuff like this.
And I have a collection, actually you have a collection now, of nine discs of them doing covers of everything from Johnny B. Goode to Gilligan's Island to The Devil Went Down to Georgia to, I mean, everything. All kinds of covers. I mean, it's like they've almost covered everything.
Right. Yeah. They're all live stuff from concerts and just it almost feels like, hey, you know, we could probably do this song, let's do it, and they'll just throw it out there and try it. I love that, and just the fact that that's how you keep concerts from getting monotonous is by throwing those random covers in there as well.
They've been friends with the Spin Doctors since the beginning. And, you know, John Popper played on a couple songs on their very first album, and then he had a couple of writing credits on their second album. And then on that collection I gave you, they're playing a cover of Cleopatra's Cat, which is off that second album. And it's fun seeing them kind of hang out with their buddies and kind of cover their buddy songs.
Right.
And he's played on a lot of different stuff. He played with Dave Matthews. He's played with Johnny Winter. He played with John O'Manson. It seems as if they were always sitting in with people.
Mm-hmm.
Metallica.
Well, it's, you know, they're a collaborative, even right from the beginning, you know, all the stuff they did with Paul Schaefer and David Letterman. I mean, that is collaborative and right up until, and I know we're going to talk about the most recent album, but talk about the pinnacle of being a collaborative band is that newest album.
In 2008, they released North Hollywood Shootout, and the kind of the weird thing about that one is it has Bruce Willis on it. You got a 68 Chevy in the middle of a dirt pile. You see to come back because it's gonna be here for a while.
Your mama needs some money. Oh, really?
Yeah, he's on the on a track called Free Willis, Ruminations from Behind Uncle Bob's Machine Shop.
Free Willis, great.
It's a
it's Bruce Willis. It's not Bruno, that fake blues player that Bruce Willis tried to create in the 90s.
Yeah, I remember who else did that?
Or 80s.
Well,
Garth Brooks had, what was it, Gaines? Michael Gaines?
Yeah, and then Arsenio Hall did Chunky A.
Right. Oh, that's a classic one too. Yeah, jeez. Yeah.
And then in 2012, they did Susie Cracks the Whip, which is actually a really fun album. It's weird for me to say that nothing super stands out, but I can listen to that album from front to back and like every song.
Mm-hmm. Cool.
And then in 2015, they did Blow Up the Moon. And yes. As you said, I think that's an album of collaborations.
It really is. It's like the duet album. And as you start listening to this and you start going through the tracks, you're thinking, oh, wait, that's, I've never heard I've never heard a Blues Traveler song that didn't exclusively feature John Popper singing. And you've got the Plain White Tees and J.C. Chazes from NSYNC and 303, a local Denver band. And it's, even the instrumentation feels like the Blues Traveler style is hanging back a little bit so that these artists don't feel like they're just slumming in, you know, basically playing karaoke with a Blues Traveler track.
Yeah, it's nice that it seems as if they're making them equal partners on the creative process of the song and not just novelty. Hey, look what we've got. Sing a verse and go away.
Mm-hmm. Right, exactly. Yes.
Because that you get that sometimes when you have those kind of collaborative albums where you have world famous guitar player and then he does 8 bars on a solo and then you kick him out.
Right. Yeah, especially where you get like, you know, the first verse or first, second verse or the person you expect on the album. And then maybe backing vocals as part of the chorus, you'll get the guest star, the guest duet appearance.
Yeah.
Yep. Totally.
The new so and such album with such and such famous person guesting, and then you hear them go, ooh, and that's it.
Right.
So, you know, it's interesting how they did that with this album, and it's actually a nice change of pace, and it shows a level of maturity and kind of willingness to help and get exposure for other people and exposure for themselves, and it's just a great way of looking at it.
Mm-hmm. For sure.
John Popper released 2 solo albums. He released 1999 Zygote, and Miserable Bastard's the song off that I like. And then he also did a project with DJ Logic called the John Popper Project with DJ Logic.
And the John Popper Project. Sorry, had to.
You had to do it. I don't blame you. And then he did the Dusky Troubadours, which it's to me, I haven't listened to all of it, but it sounds like kind of his version of the Traveling Wilburys.
Interesting. Are there other kind of guest, like known guest musicians as part of this?
To be honest with you, Brian, I wasn't ready for that question.
Oh, sorry. Anyway, you've been reacting to my you know, unplanned questions so well up until now.
Yep, not ready for that one.
That's funny.
So yes, but it just, that's kind of the way that it hits me. So we'll see.
Cool. Cool.
So one of the things that they did that I thought was really interesting was they started their own festival, the Tour Concert Festival.
Right, around the time of Lollapalooza and, geez, I'm trying to think of what else was around. Lilith Fair probably was around this time.
Probably, yeah.
Yeah.
And
but way before Coachella, or at least before Coachella became what it is today.
Yeah. And one of the things that's interesting is John Popper kind of was the liaison for the bands with this. I've been reading it in the book, and it caused him a lot of stress, and he was the guy trying to make everyone happy, and mm-hmm. It was a real juggling act, especially when he was dealing with bands who were getting bigger, but they still were kind of their friends and,
oh, sure.
And small enough to be on that bill. But, you know, it was hard because, you know, Spin Doctor's album all of a sudden broke while they were on tour with them, and Dave Matthews broke while they were on with them, and Fish started getting some actual radio play from that Billy Breathes album, and he had to kind of deal with all that, and then manager egos and band egos and all that kind of stuff.
Oh, God.
But yeah. One of the things that they did, I mean, you have to think this is mid to late 90s. They actually did a interactive kind of point and click mist style journey around the Horde festival grounds. Mm-hmm. With little postage stamp videos and you know, interviews and kind of featuring the sponsors that are doing things. And it was very cutting edge for that kind of collection of stuff.
Oh, totally. Yeah, I mean, I remember hearing about this. I remember seeing, or I actually had one that was a similar kind of thing that Peter Gabriel put together around the time of Us. It was the album after So. I think it was Us. And a similar thing.
Steam? Oh, yeah, Us had Steam on it. Yeah, you're right.
Us had Steam, mm-hmm. Yeah. And it was a similar kind of thing where it was Secret World. Is that what it was? The name is just at the... just outside my brain's fingertips, but it was that sort of thing. Whereas all these bands, or some of these more exploratory bands, were coming out with these other ways of getting their music out and these interactive things. And I totally remember that Horde CD. I never had it.
I have it. I actually am looking at it right now, because it also came with a couple of really cool live tracks. It had a live track with Blues Traveler playing with Santana. It had Blues Traveler playing with Dave Matthews Band with What Would You Say, which is also on the album. It had Ziggy Marley on it, and there's one other one. But it's really good. And, I mean, for nothing else other than that, I mean, today the point and click kind of doesn't work with advanced computers.
Sure.
And you can still load – I have VLC, so I can still watch little postage stamps, but who wants to?
Right. Yeah, that was the thing back then with the CD-ROMs. Oh, we're going to put a couple videos on there, but they have to be in QuickTime windows that are probably no bigger than a matchbook cover.
And that's a bit big. That's even big, what these videos are. And, you know, I can't get the point and click to load into the Mac because it's old Mac stuff and not new Mac stuff. And so it's a novelty.
HyperCard probably.
It's a novelty item for me to have and to fondly remember the early days of Windows 95.
Sure.
But it's fun, and I'm glad they did it, because that really was trying to expand their audience in different ways. We'll cover it later in the season, but Iron Maiden did a similar thing with their game, first-person shooter Ed Hunter. Hmm.
Yeah, I remember actually a lot of bands around this time, you'd pop a CD into your computer, and it would be the actual CD that you'd get from the band, and you'd get an interactive thing as well as the music tracks. And this was a time when, before iTunes, I was ripping music to put on a little creative jukebox or onto MP3 CDs to play in an MP3 CD player, if you remember those. Mm-hmm. And so you'd pop in a CD that had these interactive elements, and you'd have to like get your Winamp or whatever it was that was extracting the music to know exactly where to look for it.
And all the CDs had the warnings that say, like, track one is not audio.
Right.
And yes. So you had to stick it, if you stuck it in your car, you had to skip track one, and you'd be stuck with the sound of AOL.
Yeah, right.
So, yeah, I, like I said, it's a novelty, and it's something to hang on to, because it really is a part of not just technological history, but musical history.
Easily, yeah, for
so,
sure.
So I appreciate that. Let's pick their Stairway to Heaven song.
Yeah, sounds good. This, it seems like there's some obvious choices in here. So you do yours and I'm going to throw in mine, because I think it's the only other one that you didn't pick that I think is a perfect choice.
Okay, so off the top, you got to go with Runaround, because that's the thing that brought them to the public consciousness. When it's hard through the fights of a trusted friend who needs to humor me and tell me lies. Yeah, humor me and tell me lies.
Breakthrough single for them. Yeah.
Gina is a song about one of their first fans and one of their biggest fans, and then ended up being part of the kind of unofficial part of the band and tour manager, and kept, you know, brought food and kept them alive and just kind of took care of them. And that's Gina. Mm-hmm. Then But Anyway, then dropping
right.
some
another big hit.
Yeah. Yeah. And dropping some NYC. Are the ones that are can be argued as Stairway to Heaven bands or songs,
right? And I'm just going to add one to that one, which is Hook, because I think you pretty much nailed it with that set. And I think Hook was their other big single for, and or one of their other ones. Mountains Win Again, I think, was the single for them, but it was a big enough hit that I think that if you go to a Blues Traveler show and they don't do Hook, I think you're walking out a little upset, and maybe you might not pick up that XL t-shirt on the way out.
Yeah, I'm still going to argue that But Anyway is their Stairway to Heaven song. And the only reason I do that is because if you look through their set lists from the beginning of time to now, it's still in there.
It's always been in there.
And they don't shy from it. It's been part of their constant rotation since the inception of the band, almost. I think I'll spend my life alone. I really don't care right now. But anyway, the state of affairs and the state of emotion, the kind of thing that you must understand. I'll tell you one thing, you tell me, and then we walk away, maybe then shake hands. So my argument is kind of But Anyway.
And it's funny because that's probably a really cool example of where the biggest hit isn't necessarily their we're going to play this at every show. I think Elvis Costello, you know, some people might say, well, Allison is probably his Stairway to Heaven. That one he's going to play at every show. And he doesn't, but he does play, I want to say Angels Want to Wear My Red Shoes almost all the time, or you know, some of his older stuff, My Aim Is True, because that was a line from Allison, Radio, or Pump It Up. But so there's an example where their biggest hit may not be the one they play in every concert.
Yeah, that's just my thought. What do you think? Do you think that But Anyway is kind of the one?
I think so. I think But Anyway is the right choice. And, you know, obviously there's a place where you can look. There's like a set lists website that like lets you look up setlist.fm, where you can actually look up. Let's see how close we were, actually. You know, what we're going to do is from now on, we're going to, we'll pull this site up after we do our picks to see what, how close we were to their most played songs. All right. There we go. So in however many years they've been touring from 1985 all the way until 2016, they've played But Anyway 1,280 times, according to this website.
And can you imagine that? The same song?
Yeah, but with these guys, you think it sounds the same?
No, I'm sure it doesn't.
There's no way that it sounds the same.
Yeah, yeah. I'm sure it doesn't. It's kind of like I discovered the art of Lowrider on the harmonica due to their live album. They did Live from the Fall. Lowrider, gonna ride a little slower.
Oh, sure. Right.
And it's a great live album. They crossed Go Out and Drive with Lowrider, and they wrap back up with Go Out and Drive. And I'm like, oh, yeah, you can do that da 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 on the harmonica. I'm like, great. So next thing I know, I'm playing Lowrider on the harmonica.
All right, so we had But Anyway and Run Around and Hook. Those are their first three. The fourth one isn't one that we talked about at all on this show, and it's Crash Burn. Go see, popular for their shows, but not a hit, and not one that I think.
Where does
find
All in
there.
The Groove fall?
All in the Groove, probably. If you say he doesn't play it because of his,
they have, but they don't do it often. So I'm wondering where it falls.
Wow, I'm still scrolling through. Oh, here we go. It's their 92nd most played song. and they've done it 71 times.
See, that says something about maybe the difficulty of playing that song live.
Totally. Yeah, and timing range on it. Basically, the last time they played it was at Red Rocks on July 4th, 2011. Mm-hmm. But prior to that, it was 9 years since they played it in concert. They played it a few times. Oh, no, I guess just Irving Plaza, New York on November 7th, 2002 in the Theater of Living Arts, Philadelphia. In 2002,
Wow.
And then prior to that, more big gaps. So a lot, here you go, a lot in 1992, which makes sense.
Yeah, because that's off the Travelers and Thieves.
Right. And then a couple times in 95, a couple times in 98, a couple times in 2002, and that's about it.
Yeah. Like I said, it's got to be because of the vocal range.
Right. They've played Psycho Joe more times in concert.
Anything else we want to cover before we get to our picks?
I think let's get to the picks. This is my favorite part.
All right, Brian, you're up.
All right, so first song is one that I mentioned at the very beginning or close to the beginning of the show, and it's All in the Groove. This was one of the first songs I remember hearing from the band. This was one that was on constant rotation on KBCO in Boulder. You might shake and you might stammer or dance like MC Hammer, but could that pop clamor remind you of who you are and where you're going and whose mind that you're blowing? And if your car needs towing, don't move. I bet calmly call the AAA, you got nothing to prove. And it came from the Travelers and Thieves album from 1991, their second album. And is surprisingly not one of their greatest hits, even though I distinctly remember it being released as a single. How they leave this off, I mean, I guess it does have to do with that vocal register, you know, being they don't want to promote a song that they can't or won't perform live. And I guess I get that. I totally understand it, but it still deserves to be up there.
Yeah, I love this song. It's still part of my rotation on my phone. One of the things that I've discovered with Blues Traveler is they're great road trip music.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah. this is at the top of all of them.
Oh, it's a great point. Yeah, they're totally fun for road trips. Second up, you know, I've got to have a cover in here, and I might even surprise you with a second one. But the first one is one that they released on their greatest hits, which I believe is called 25. And you know how bands will sometimes do this for the fans. You're a fan, you've been collecting all the Blues Traveler albums, and oh man, I've got everything they've done, all those albums they've released. Oh, greatest hits album? I guess there's no reason for me to pick that up because I have all the music. What? They've recorded a new song just for the greatest hits album? And in this case, it was a cover of Sublime's What I Got. And they do such a great job with it that I feel like, Tina was listening to this and she wasn't sure if theirs was the original version or Sublime's was the original version, because it's so good and it fits so well with their sound that you can see Sublime covering them and saying, oh yeah, we're going to make this song ours.
What's even more fitting is the topic of the song also fits, you know, right? it's not just the rhythm and the meter and the style of the song that fits. It's the topic and the lyric.
Yeah, I don't need drugs. I've got love.
Yeah.
My mom needs drugs, but I don't.
Yeah,
and my dog ran away, and that stinks, but I'm laid back.
Yeah.
What do I care?
Yeah. It's totally right at the ground. Life is to love the one he got, because you might care an over one you might get. Never start no static, I just get it off my chest. Never want to battle with a bulletproof vest. Take a small example, take a tip and dip from me. Take all of your money, give it all to charity. Love's what I got, I feel it in my reach. And Sublime South will always be from Long Beach. It all come back to you, you better get what you deserve.
It's a great tune. And that you're right, that attitude definitely helps it feel like a Blues Traveler song. Most Precarious is my next choice, and I forgot to write down which album this was from.
It's Straight Until Morn.
Straight Until Morn. Oh, yeah, right. Don't you let away. Talking about a forever after. Don't you give up, don't you dare give in. Don't you give up, don't you dare give in. Doesn't it seem most precarious? This would have been a single from this album, I think, because I do remember this song being released and getting some radio play. But what's cool about it is it's a very different vocal style for John Popper. We talked about that high register that he does for All in the Groove. This one's a much lower, a more subdued version of John Popper, I think.
there's a story in his book about the song Hook, and he got some criticism that he's very wordy in his verses. And so he wrote Hook being very aware of how many words are going into each verse at the beginning.
Sure.
And then the fast part at the end, he actually put in every word he could. Just to kind of balance it. So it's actually something he's aware of.
And by the way, that song Hook and that rap, we didn't talk about this earlier in the show, but because we were playing in the office, there was a buddy of mine, a guy named Chris Brown, who he and I would have a battle to see who could do more of that rap section of Hook, because there's so many words jammed in there and so much to try and remember, and it changes cadence a little bit partway through. And I think I could still probably remember about three quarters of it if it came on the radio or if I was playing the CD today. All right. So number four on my list is Girl Inside My Head. This is not just a fun song, but in looking for other music videos by Blues Traveler, I discovered the video for Girl Inside My Head. And you can see the skinny, weird John Popper, the guy who doesn't look like John Popper, who's some sort of imposter in this band.
The imposter popper.
Right. This is the second track from the Bridge album, and it is a perfect demonstration of that clever songwriting, the clever lyric writing that we were talking about earlier in the show, because it has such a lot going on in multiple meanings and multiple ways you can read this this term, Girl Inside My Head.
Yep.
And it's a woman that's basically playing with John Popper's head. Not just a woman he's imagining, but a woman who's actually just trying to mess with him, I think.
How bad will it get if I let her get to know me? Should she see the willing dog or should it be a jungle cat? And most of all, my God, how does she make her eyes do that?
It's. I'm glad you had this on your list, because it had to be on one of our lists. And if you hadn't put it on there, I definitely would have. Because when we started the show, I actually had the song stuck in my head for at least a week in preparation for this episode.
Really? Well, you kind of took the other song I would have picked from Bridge. And so when I saw you had that one on your list, it was an easy switch for me to make to Girl Inside My Head. So not only a fun song, but also some amazing chord progression. And I like songs that have unpredictable, it's not just G, D, C, G, D, C, and repeating that over and over. It's some fun stuff in there.
Yeah.
Last one on my list, because I need a couple covers on my list for some reason, is Get Out of Denver, which is a cover of Bob Seger and the Silver Bullet Band song that they recorded for the film Things to Do in Denver When You're Dead. And again, just like the Sublime song, they do it in a way that feels like, that makes it feel like a Blues Traveler song and not a cover of somebody else's song. Maybe I guess when you do those random covers night after night in concert, you realize that your goal, and this is great when bands realize this, the goal isn't to sound like the original. The goal is to make it sound like it's your song.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, they even took Gilligan's Island and made it sound like something they would have done.
Right. Well, island music, and if they weren't playing Red Rocks, they'd be playing Fiji or something. And singing about coconuts.
All right. So my turn.
Those are my five. Yes. On to yours.
All right. So my turn. My first one is from the most recent album called Blow Up the Moon. And it features 303 and JC Go ahead.
J.C. Chazes.
Yeah, there you go.
How I pronounce it. Yeah. It might be J.C. Chazé, but I can't imagine any self-respecting person would allow themselves to be called
Chase J.C. Chazé.
Right.
Anyway, it's a fun song, and the video is awesome. It's like Blues Traveler meets GTA. And
right. Yeah,
it's
I think
great.
They used GTA footage. It's basically making it look like they're in the GTA cars and running around and crashing and spinning around and throwing up and all that sort of thing.
Yeah, it's so much fun. And it's such a great, catchy song, in which I think some of the middle albums in those middle, early 2000s, the Truth Be Told, Bastardos, Cover Yourself, well, not Cover Yourself, but like North Hollywood Shootout, some of that, they were missing those songs that had those kind of the hooks and the catchiness.
The
and,
fun.
Yeah, and this definitely brought it back. I mentioned this album early, and it's the title track to Save His Soul, called Save His Soul. This is such a good song. I don't even know how to put into words how good of a song this is. It has such a great harmonica part, and it's got such a kind of a gritty, growly vocal performance, and the guitar stuff is great, and there's some hi-hat work on Save His Soul that's amazing. So it's really, really good. I can't sing this album and this song's praises enough. Then the next one is from the album 4, which kind of surprises me because I played the Dickens out of 4. And it's hard for me to not have very specific memories about 4 when I listened to it. But I had to pull one out because it actually taught me something. So the song I chose was Stand from the album 4. Because it's a long way to fall. And it taught me about the two drog. Now, in harmonica, the two drog actually can give you three notes depending on how you bend it. And so I didn't realize you could double bend on the two drog until this song. And I was able to learn how to do that, and it gave me a new tool in the repertoire. And so it was great. So super thanks to Stan, but it's also got some cool time changes. And it's just it's a good song. So
I would have thought that was a poker turn before you explained it. So I'm glad the two draw. Oh yeah, he pulled an ace on the two draw.
No, it's definitely a harmonica thing. But yeah, and to get a good two draw takes some time and some practice. So it sure. Definitely taught me about the art of the two draw. Then the song I think you were going to pick from Bridge and I picked was Back in the Day. Coming on back today. Kind of funny, but I picture it on exactly as it was back in the day. Sure enough, when the train pulls in, there's so little that I recognize. Is it the scenery or my selected memory? Just a simple fact I gotta realize. My friends are gone and their lives have moved on, and I guess it's just the way it is. And this is a song, one of those storytelling songs about how when you go back to somewhere from when you were younger or some other point in your life, everything is kind of familiar, but not quite. And it feels different and it looks different, but it feels familiar and the same, but it's not. And that kind of conversation you have with yourself, and he nails it as far as that sentiment.
Totally. Yeah.
And then my fifth song is Psycho Joe from Straight On Till Morn. So satisfying, I would be lying if I didn't want to hear the beat. And so we gather around Psycho Joe, the quiet loner's always blowing strong. Which which tells the
story.
Such
a fun song.
Yeah, it does. It tells the story of Psycho Joe. And really, yeah, without spoiling anything, because there really is kind of a spoiler to this, go listen to Psycho Joe.
Yeah. Jeez. It's fun and dark. And
yes.
I love that.
Any song that ends with an electric chair at the end, you got to love.
Right.
Right. And then I'm pulling a trick from your hat.
Sure.
And I'm
doing this before. Sure.
And I'm doing a bonus song. And this is a never released song called As We Wonder. It was a demo that I got on a bootleg years and years and years ago. And I wonder aloud, do they understand what the music means? You know, baby, see the blue and red at first kiss, singing for some dimes to red stage, laughing all the way. And I absolutely love this piece of music, and I wish they'd released it in some sort of regular form. Mm-hmm. And it's just great. It's a simple, fun sing-along song early in their career, and I love it.
Hmm. Yeah, obviously I haven't heard it, but I read the lyrics, and it's really, really cool. It's almost like they're, well, you can't really say Chinese Democracy because that did eventually get released, but they're, you know, they're Great White Whale kind of thing.
Yeah, and it's a great song.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
Their Prince's Purple album. There's an example.
Right there. All right. I guess that about wraps this up.
That's a great, yeah, this is a great crash course in Blues Traveler. All right. Well, if you want to let us know what you think, or maybe you have a favorite Blues Traveler song, let us know. Email us, soundographypodcast@gmail.com is the email address to use. You can follow us on Twitter @TheSoundography. Of course, our website, soundography.com. And there you'll actually find our playlist, showing all the songs. You can listen to them as on a Spotify playlist, or follow the links and get them at Amazon.com and make your own Soundography themed greatest hits Blues Traveler album. All right, that is going to do it for us today. So on behalf of Hammond Chamberlain, this is Brian Ibbett saying thanks again for joining us. We'll see you next time right here on Soundography.